The street was chaos. People were being attacked everywhere, struck with batons, maced, pushed to the ground. One officer picked up a piece of PVC pipe. I immediately called for a street medic who helped me to flush my eyes out with water as best I could. Police cars were now streaming into the blockaded street. The anti-authoritarian bloc was retreating. I wanted to yell for everyone to come back, to push through, to combat the violence with sheer numbers, but everything was happening too quickly. As I worked my way back to the main street, half blind, I passed a photographer being smashed against a car. He pulled his arms in to demonstrate that he wasn't resisting, allowing his body to smack the hood, then roll to the pavement. The guard on the lens of his camera snapped. The officer stood over him screaming and threatening, and I wanted to help. I wanted to smash that cop into the car in the same way he had just done to that kid, but at the same time I was saddened and frustrated by all of this. I didn't have a problem with this or any other officer out here. I'd never met any of them in my life, and here I was engaged in a street battle with them. Why had they attacked us? Why prevent us from rejoining the other marchers that were now only yards away, staring with mouths agape at this scene? Yes, police and military forces have, throughout history, always served state and capital before people, and there's never an excuse to use force against a non-threatening individual. But at the same time, I knew these cops believed that they were doing what was right. To them, they weren't attacking non-threatening citizens on a public street. They were following orders. You don't have to critically examine what you're doing if you don't decide what it is in the first place. I don't take issue with officers, not really. I take issue with the ideology that's molded most of them into identical foot soldiers. Just following orders, ma'am. For me, the police are just the most visible branch of a system so massive that it's hard to frame well. What I'm trying to get at is that I know, and I think it should be known, that to focus on the confrontation is to ignore the essence of the problem. But next confrontation, I'll have two hands free. That's all for today's Sprouts. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Jim Bennett and Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. Our air traffic controller is Ursula Rudenberg. You can find us on the web at sproutsradio.org. This week's writer, editor, and producer was Kendall at WRIRLP, Richmond, Virginia. I am Kendall, and we'll see you next week on Sprouts. I'll bring the beer. It's a late, late shift, no one to fear. And ride, ride.
And up next, Bathrop Spears Broadside's May 5th show, 2005. Stay with us.
I was born in the city hospital, torn from darkness into the light. First man I saw was the first to hit me. First woman I saw said, "Hush, don't cry." I played with girls till I was 6 years old. Guys told me, "You don't want no girl a friend. You can kiss them, you can touch them. When you screw them, you'll be a man. Every man gonna be a soldier. Every man be cut to kill. Every man looking over his shoulder. Every man be shaking still." I played war, king of the mountain. When I hurt, I did not cry. Kids would laugh. The guy hit me, hot fire in the stomach. I hit a little guy, I put him on his back. And me, 8-year-old cowboy, he said, "Come on, what's the matter, you a queer?" We went to Molly's, pulled her down and kissed her. She got up, walked inside without a word. Every man gonna be a soldier. Every man kill. Every man looking over his shoulder. Every man he's shaking still. Came the war to my generation. Government said, "Son, it's your time, make us proud." Some went to jail, some went to Canada. Some went over, some went crazy, some went down. I walked the streets, jagged with strangers. Wait for the gauntlets to be heard. Push to shove, edge of a razor. Make something of it, he'll cut you good. Every man gonna be a soldier. Every man be cut to kill. Every man looking over his shoulder. Every man be shaken still. I've killed, but I am not a killer. I have cried out at the devil in the dark. I have reached out through the bars of my confinement. I have watched the tower I built fall apart. I listen for the breathing of the baby. Gonna hold him in my arms when he cries. Gonna meet my lover's gaze without turning. Gonna see myself and be satisfied. Every man got love abiding. Every man got a curse on heels. Every man got a heart in hiding. Every man gonna be
And that was Fred Small, Every Man, from his cassette, I Will Stand Fast. I'm playing a number of those in the last few shows. Well, hello. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. 2 hours of civil rights, lots of tapes, sometimes some interviews, occasional musical break, and hopefully your calls. Call-in number here is 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, because that's what you're tuned to at 101.1 FM, also streaming at www.freakradio.org. And you can jump on the chat room at pagesincolor.com, pagesincolor.com, if you want to make a comment and you can't get in on the phone, and if you want to leave a message for off-air discussion, or you perhaps just got some questions you don't particularly want to go public with, or maybe you just don't seem appropriate for that, 423-4833, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, which is the acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, a group I work with. I keep saying that every time I come on the air, and gets to be the same old thing, but it's there. And it's a nice line to use. You get some information there, and you can leave me a message if you want. But the best thing to do when you're hearing this show, if you got some thoughts, is to call in, because that way I can hear you and actually can respond to you as you call in, and others can hear you too, and they can benefit by your experience, benefit from a dialogue with you perhaps, or at least they can say what they think if they don't like what you have to say. Been following a number of issues, and one of them I've been following most recently has been the gentrification and kind of use by merchants of private police and public funds to privatize previously public areas and criminalize poor people. And we see this, of course, downtown with the downtown ordinances in Santa Cruz. But it's also happening, perhaps even more so, out at shopping centers like the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos. And the exemplar case there is the case of Jerry Henry, who's been on this show, as is his associate Richard Quigley, his attorney friend Kate Wells, others, myself. I've been discussed his case. And this is the case of a guy who two shopping centers, actually it's not necessarily the shopping center per se, but certainly some businesses in the shopping center, in the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center in Aptos, the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, which is calling Crosby's Coffee Company, which also has offices in two cafes, actually, in Santa Cruz, downtown. The Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company is one I patronize and hope to continue patronizing, but I'm also going to be giving out information about and urging people to send a strong message to the management about and possibly eventually to boycott. The other company is the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, actually called the Pacific Coffee Roasting Company, and the Aptos Center, which is a coffee shop right in the shopping center just slightly north, slightly up the road from the Rancho Del Mar. And both these places have banned the homeless minister. He's not homeless, actually. He's disabled is how he describes himself, but he ministers to a number of people. Many of the youth he ministers to are homeless. Ministers is a big word. He's a friend and an advisor and essentially a person who stands up for the right to be in public spaces, even if merchants don't like the way you look, if merchants don't like the way you respond to authority, if you don't immediately do what their security guards tell you to do because you think it's inappropriate for you to do that. In other words, if you believe that somehow you have constitutional rights other than those that the merchants decide they will grant you, then this is considered, at least by some merchants, to be the basis for prosecution. And that's what's happening with Jerry Henry, who's facing a number of charges. It's 11 charges now, 10 or 11 charges, for essentially using the public spaces at the coffee roasting company, mostly at the Colin Crosby's Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, but also more recently at the, I guess it's the Hopes, that's the last name, Hope runs the Mr. and Ms. Hope, perhaps, or I think Dana Hope is one of the owners of the place or one of the managers. The owner appeared in court the other day, I believe, with his lawyer. That was at least what I was told. There was a hearing last week on this issue, and we're going to be hearing some tapes on this. The issue was, should there be a $25,000 bail and a 10 charges for conspiracy to buy a cup of coffee, which is actually what Henry is really charged with. And then when he was excluded, essentially protesting and saying, you know, you're treating me like a, you know, treating me like a nigger. You're treating me like a, this nigger's not going to go away, man. This man's going to stay here. This man's going to continue to seek to use public services and, or let's put it this way, public accommodations. It's a private business, but it's open to the public. And you might say, well, you know, private businesses, they have the right to refuse service to anyone. No, you can't discriminate in a private business in that way. You have to have a legitimate reason for denying the public access. And you certainly should have a legitimate reason for trying to do that using the criminal law, and that's what's happened with Jerry Henry. He's been facing months and months of prosecution for essentially trying to simply be present in public areas and inform the community about what the history of that particular coffee shop has been. The coffee shop may not like it, but it's a First Amendment protected activity. At least that's my view, and I think it's particularly important for poor people because poor people can be excluded at the snap of a fingers from somebody in power without much recourse except the power of the public to say no. I mean, there's theoretically the UNRRA Civil Rights Act, which says you can't discriminate against a class of people, and I guess I'm still looking to see where that can be effectively used locally, and I guess I was presented with a case some months ago that indicated, I guess, some effective use of it in the Walmart situation, but I haven't yet gotten a clear sense of that from local attorneys as being immediately applicable here in a way that people can, you know, take to the bank, so to speak, and can use. Anyway, here's a little from the summary dismissal hearing. This is an unusual proceeding where Jerry Henry, charged with 10 different counts, facing up to a number of years in jail. Initially, I think it was up to 10 years in jail, but then I was told it was less because it's not a 1 year per misdemeanor. It's some of the misdemeanors are 90 days. Not entirely clear, but it's somewhere certainly more than 2 or 3 years in jail is a possible maximum. And this all has to do with his simply trying to buy peacefully a cup of coffee at one of these two roasting companies in the Aptos area and being turned away. And then informing people outside what was happening and then being arrested for it, in essence. He wasn't arrested at any time while he was actually doing it for disturbing the peace. That's what they claim. They claim that his use of the word nigger was disturbing the peace because he referred to himself as a nigger, as he was being treated like a second-class citizen. I've talked about this before. Here's some of the discussion outside the courtroom. The court denied the summary dismissal motion. That was Judge Heather Morse in the jailhouse court last week. And she, in spite of, I think, a very compelling brief from the defense, has said even if you say that everything the prosecution says is accurate and true, still what they say does not amount to criminal behavior. It's a First Amendment protected speech, and you aren't engaging in, you know, aren't trying to get someone to fight with you. You're simply informing the community of what you consider to be outrageous behavior by private merchants, and indeed by the sheriff's office and by the district attorney's office, who are involved in this whole thing and have been for years, I might add. So let's hear a little bit about that afterward. The summary dismissal was, of course, denied by Heather Morris, who... I call her Mockery Morris or Make It Up As You Go Morris. She's a very sunny woman, has a nice smile on her face, very pleasant disposition, comes on with a merry kind of look. But she seems to me to be intimately connected with the district attorney and police authorities that she wouldn't consider this for a minute seriously, even though these charges have no merit. And to put Jerry Henry through them, is... considering he's a disabled guy, he's already suffered a lot of discrimination as a consequence of this series of charges by the district attorney's office, which was done under the old sheriff Mark Tracy before the new sheriff Robbins came in, and still being pursued by Bob Lee and his flunky, who's also the mayor of Scotts Valley, Paul Maraganda, costing at least $50,000 of taxpayers' money so far, according to the defense attorney. Let's hear a little bit of the discussion after the case let out. And what happens? What happened with the case was the defense said these charges have no merit at all. They shouldn't even go to a jury. And the judge said, oh, well, let's let the jury decide. I mean, heck, the jury has its rights. Let's let the jury decide. It's a strange thing to say. A jury doesn't really have its rights. The jury is a mechanism that's called into being if there are real crimes which a person can be credibly accused. If it's just the merchants want to get rid of some guy, which is what's happening here, they should, you know, claim some sort of civil damages, and instead of trying to get the public prosecutor to claim that there's some criminal behavior against the community going on. It's a dispute between individuals, a civil dispute. It's not a case of criminal activity at all, and I don't think it even is a legitimate civil dispute. I think that what's going on here is that the merchants, as in downtown Santa Cruz, wish to expand their aegis, expand their domain, expand their own commercial setting, regardless of the needs of the rest of the community. And enough said. Here's some specifics on that and some tapes from last week.
And that would have been a perfect opportunity to say, yeah, that's why they make the whole civil process. That's what it's for. It doesn't have to be done under the criminal.
Outside the court. I wanted to add a little bit more, but I felt like she was done at that point.
Oh, you were wonderful.
Woman's voice is the defense attorney for jury.
I don't think
Christine
I've heard a better advocacy presented in this county in all the time I've spent in the courtrooms. You're just marvelous. You're just marvelous.
I hope you tape recorded it, Jerry.
It's nice to win when you
win. My tape ran out.
His paper ran out. Your tape ran out. You know you're talking too much when that happens.
No, but you did. You made a transcript that'll live through the ages. That transcript is one that should be just passed around law schools somewhere or another, because that's beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. I mean, I
that's always kind of fun. Yeah. To win when you do.
Becky Johnson, you were around for the trial, and you also were here for some of the previous legal proceedings against Jerry Henry, also at the Rancho Del Mar, and also at the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company. Actually, it was the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company, all owned by Colleen Crosby. Do you recall that previous case?
Oh, yeah. I took extensive notes, too. And I, of course, was not happy with the verdict, although most of the charges were dismissed. It seemed that the courts felt that with, I don't know, was there like 10 charges, they felt that there must be something there, and they did convict him on, was it one or two charges?
A jury trial.
Yeah, this was a couple years ago.
It's still winding its way through the courts, right, Richard? The previous convictions, the jury got...
Well, he's still got his complaint in front of the federal court, yeah. And he's still got that, the habeas corpus over there.
And the final charge, which was still been upheld, was...
The 415.
Disturbing a peace with offensive words. And what were the offensive words, allegedly?
Well, I guess it goes back to calling himself a nigger again, yeah.
In a previous case back in 97.
This politically correct dictionary / Santa Cruz Law Dictionary is a little much.
Now, you yourself were involved in some altercations with the Santa Cruz, with the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company in those days.
Yeah.
You want to summarize what that was about and whether it's changed since then?
No, it's the same exact shit that they're doing to Jerry. The difference is I'm not disabled. So they didn't prosecute me. They haven't got me on trial. They're not putting me through all these fucking ringers because I'm articulate and bright and able to communicate. Mr. Henry is disabled, and it's a limiting factor in his ability to defend himself, so they're coming at him.
Initially, what did they attempt to... Did they initially charge you with some stuff and then dropped it?
Same shit. Smoking a cigarette. They come over and told me not to smoke. I told them blow it out the fucking ass. And they said, we'll arrest you for 602.1. I said, we'll get to arresting.
That's interfering with a business and then refusing to leave.
Yeah, intentional interference with a business. Following the DA's logic, standing outside a fucking coffee shop, having a cigarette and a cup of coffee, which is all one word, is intentional interference with the business. You can't find many consumers that agree with that perspective, but the district attorney's office is obviously fully committed to that.
Paul Maragana, who's the district attorney, is also the Scotts Valley mayor. Is there any connection there? I mean, it didn't happen in Scotts Valley, after all.
Well, no, he's been an advocate for business against citizens for a long fucking time. His career goes all the way back, I understand, to Berkeley or Oakland or some goddamn place.
He's been San Francisco in 98. He prosecuted food not bombs activists working as an attorney for one of the neighborhood vigilante conservative residents group.
Yeah, he's a fascist. I mean, what else can I? He's a fascist. He's a fucking police state fascist piece of shit. You know, he's the perfect fucking mayor for Scotts Valley.
Returning to the case of Jerry Henry, before he was convicted.
Am I wrong about that? Did I mischaracterize him in any substantial way? I realize
I don't want to be prosecuted for using the F word near the court. I'd like to agree, but
the F word,
fascist.
Oh, okay.
We don't want.
I wasn't sure.
I mean, after all, you know, intent to interfere with the court's business, the refusal to leave, I might be arrested.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't be too careful. But again, the back. but you spoke positively about 3 or 4 months ago about how there seemed to be a change in the attitude at the coffee roasting company, perhaps because of the new Sheriff Robbins, because of most of the signs, the no trespassing signs, had disappeared.
Robbins is on record. Robbins is on record as he had all those 602.1 signs taken down, or he at least ordered them all down. There's still one up, but it's only the one that's over by where Jerry stands. But yeah,
a coincidence.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Well, it's just coincidentally. But Robbins' position as sheriff, unlike Tracy's, is this is civil, not criminal, which is correct. He's been misled by a bunch of brain dead lawyers to think that it's otherwise, but it's not. It's civil. It's not criminal. And if they want to act against him civilly, that would be an abuse of process as well. But abuse of civil process is as common as child custody hearings. I mean, it's just the civil process. That's what it's for, is abuse of process.
Well, I understand that yesterday Jerry and Jonah, his aide, were out near the coffee roasting company, and Jonah was. Suddenly discovered his van was about to be towed from the infamous parking spot that you yourself disputed.
Oh, yeah. Well, they won't tow mine.
So, Becky, you've surveyed this whole progress of this sort of progression of horribles, the charges thrown against Jerry Henry over the last 10 years now, nearly 8 years. Is this just personal to him, or have other people also suffered that? I know his aides have gotten kind of drawn into it, and, of course, Richard Quigley, his friend, was drawn into it for a while. But have you gotten any continuing complaints about how the Aptus Coffee Roasting Company or the Pacific Coffee Roasting Company, which is another company where he's been charged in the next shopping center in Aptos, or for that matter the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company, has been discriminating against poor and homeless people? I mean, should we consider this a broader issue, or is this just a case of kind of a particular fight?
Well, I've always felt that the prosecution of Jerry Henry had a lot to do with the fact that he looks like a homeless person in his manner and dress. His association has been a lot with young people, who are another class of people that the merchants at the shopping center would prefer not being around their stores. And that it's just part of a general attempt on the part of the shopping center to clean up people that they class undesirables from their store and to find some sort of reason. What's disturbing in this case is the way that the sheriff's office and the district attorney are willing to file criminal charges and use the criminal courts to go after Mr. Henry when if these businesses had a legitimate complaint, they could file civil charges, which is the proper forum for these things, and in those civil courts they could determine whether he was interfering with their business or in that way. It's almost like the Santa Cruz County authorities are making up their new case law, and it's a very disturbing trend and that the public should be aware of and should be vigilantly opposed to.
Making it up in what sense?
Dragging these matters into a criminal court where the entire costs are borne by the taxpayers when it really should be the merchants paying these court costs to get their day in court for, you know, something that, I don't know. I really don't think that the merchants even have a civil remedy for people coming into their business that are dressed in...
Can you describe Jerry's dress as attire that would indicate to you why you might be mistaken for a, quote, homeless person?
Jerry once told me that he puts on a new outfit on January 1st, and he pretty much lets whatever happened to it over the course of the year. And then the next January 1st, he puts on a new outfit. So here we are. It's April 27th, and he's had the same clothes on since January 1st. And
he doesn't smell particularly dirty to me. I've never noticed an odor about Jerry. I don't know. Are you suggesting he's grubby and unkempt and stinky?
No. I'm just saying that...
I'd say his hair is a more distinguishable feature in the sense that he doesn't choose to tie his hair back or anything.
He had long brown hair, scruffy beard, floppy old pants, a flannel shirt. It's kind of a checker pattern.
Yeah, he's got a red and black plaid shirt on. It doesn't have any tears or holes evident. However, I think that by this coming December, it may have some holes and tears evident.
I see. That seems to be a more an area in society where people tend to be critical or sensitive to the way people who wear their hair just totally natural.
I don't think it's this hair that has caused them concern. It's his willingness to resist authority. He's rather prickly about when he's told, for example, that he can't have a cup of coffee there because they didn't like... I'm not quite sure what they didn't like in the very beginning.
I'll tell you, if I had just gone to court the day before and found out there were no restraining orders on me whatsoever from going into a business, and the next day went into a business and was repelled, not for anything I said or did, but just because of who I was, I would be upset too.
But apparently, if the recitation of the facts is correct, and I haven't checked that with Ms. Judd, but she makes it, I think this, she was reciting the facts that were in the brief, as alleged by the police reports. He entered the store, he was told he was not welcomed by the owner, and that he stayed, purchased a cup of coffee, and then attempted to leave, and then was again accosted by the owner. Now, I guess the defense was to 415, which is the crime of supposedly using fighting words to disturb the peace. It wasn't that he might be considered to be guilty of trespass. He was asked to leave by the owner and didn't leave. But of course, they're not charging him with that in this particular case.
There were no restraining orders in effect when he went into the Aptos Coffee Roast, or no, where was it? In the Aptos Center.
The Pacific Coffee Roast in the Aptos Center.
Right.
The most recent case.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
December 14th of that.
And when he went in there, there was the owner had no grounds for dismissing him. In fact, you could say what the owner said to him were fighting words.
Yeah. Well, has anybody heard of any cases recently of other homeless people or homeless-looking people who have been denied access to these places? I know that Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, passed a resolution several months ago which urged people to convey to at least the Aptos Coffee Roasting Company and also the Santa Cruz Coffee Roasting Company that Huff supported a policy of non-discrimination, urged the dropping of the charges against Jerry Henry. I think you actually signed a statement which you turned into Colleen Crosby, right, Becky?
Perhaps.
Yeah, I think you were one of two people who did, and we're starting to rain out here, so we're going to have to leave. But there was a flyer was written up on the issue. Is discrimination at coffee shops a problem here in Santa Cruz and in Aptos, or is it just this one case?
I've heard that there's just general discrimination, that a lot of homeless people are denied the ability to go into businesses, or they can't bring their backpacks in, or perhaps the owners, mistakenly or not, recognize them from previous encounters and ban them from the store.
Can you name a couple cases in the last month?
No.
Appreciate your candor. Thank you, Becky Johnson. It's April 27th in front of Borders. I'm sitting here next to a man with a sign. If you have some change, I need some. If you need some change, I have some. What is your name?
Casper.
Casper, you're here. It's been raining.
Before we go on to Casper, just very quickly, once the rain breaks up, you may find me sitting at a table with the words HUF on it, for, again, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, distributing a flyer, $25,000 bail for conspiracy to buy a cup of coffee right in front of the coffee roasting company downtown Santa Cruz, encouraging people to tear off a coupon, walk into the coffee roasting company, and deliver a message that the community does not support discriminatory behavior against poor people and a whole extended prosecution against someone who defends the rights of poor people and young people. So keep an eye out for word of that happening. I'll probably post it on Indie Media, and I'll be down there doing some makeshift tabling and hopefully getting this flyer out. Now back to Casper.
But Free Radio Santa Cruz sees you out here in spite of that. It's not raining anymore. How's it been today for the change? Have you been able to give away enough change to people to feel?
I gave away enough today. People wanted hot coffee. Stay warm.
How many coffees would you say you subsidized today?
Probably about three. Three big coffees, though, the big ones, the Ventis.
And how many of your coffees were subsidized today?
About one.
Yeah, that's a pretty good number.
They're not bad.
More outgo than income.
Yeah, it's all right, though, because I get given a lot, so I don't mind giving back.
And are you a passerby, a longtime Santa Cruzan, or?
I'm a traveler.
You're a traveling man?
How long I'll be here. I might end up living here for the rest of my life. But then again, I might be gone tomorrow.
What have you seen on the streets that you wish to share with Free Radio?
I've seen a lot of kindness. I've seen a lot of smiles. I see some beautiful musicians. That is my favorite thing about Santa Cruz, is all the street players. Makes me wish I could play an instrument.
I just walked up from the veterans hall, and I've only seen one. I guess it's because of the...
It's weather today. There was some out earlier, but it's gotten cold. Like over where they had the food market, the farmer's market, there was a bunch of people playing drums today. Tambourines.
Stopped by the police?
Oh, no, of course not.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Sometimes. It depends. Not at the farmer's market, though. Maybe if there was like 10 people here in the corner of the street playing, then the cops would definitely probably stop.
Well, actually, there were some drummers across the street. Actually, they don't have permits, but I've heard that they've actually not been drumming because of hassles from the police. But have you heard them drumming recently, other than today or
the other day? There's some kids that drum.
Oh, yeah, they were doing, but I mean out at the farmer's market.
Oh, that's Food Not Bombs. It's like a little
Food Not Bombs serves there, but was there much drumming going on?
A little bit, and a little bit less than normal, maybe. Probably because they're toning it down, I guess.
Robert, should you point out that this homeless person is being overrun by beautiful women?
It speaks for itself. What's your name?
My street name is Cookie Monster.
Oh, welcome. Anything you want to add about what's happening on the street?
No, most people are pretty nice. Even the people that just walked by are pretty nice.
No hassles from the polizei?
Polizei, no, not very much.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. And now we have a word from Preacher Mike.
I actually want to give a commendation to the police department. They've restrained themselves as much this year over other years when they've swept the place by now. I think they're being very, very tolerant, and I hope that street people can negotiate a nice, smooth summertime season where we all live together and enjoy the opportunity to do so, because that's what Santa Cruz is all about.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Bob, for sharing that with me.
Certainly. Thank you for sharing it with Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're talking to a criminal camper who is still at large. Your name, sir?
Robert Valencia.
And, Robert, you say that you... Are you currently fleeing the law as you attempt to negotiate your way forward? As dusk falls, another evening of crime awaits you. You had a camping ticket you wish to talk about?
Yes, I had a camping ticket that I got back in December. I got picked up by parole for loitering for drug activity with no drugs on my person.
And where did this criminal loitering happen? You obviously must have been completely guilty, or nothing would have been done, right?
Right. I was standing in front of Borders Bookstore.
Oh, a drug zone if I ever saw one. And what time of day was this?
This was about 3:30, 3:20. I had to go see my probation officer. My parole officer showed up with the police, and she thought I was doing something wrong when I was standing there talking to some of my friends, two pregnant women, and she picked me up for loitering for drug activity. Next thing I know...
And what did she claim in court? Or did you admit the offense, or did you contest it?
I beat the charge for my probation, and I beat the charge for the city of Santa Cruz, for the police, and parole got me for 5 months.
For what, for contact with a police officer, or what?
For the charge loitering for drug activity.
So... You were convicted of it, or was you had a hearing on that charge?
I had a hearing on the charge, and they still convicted me on the charge itself.
Drugs were found on your person?
Nope.
What testimony was presented that you were loitering with intent to involve yourself in drug activity?
I had a Radio Shack two-way radio on me, where if I had three different friends with the same radio and same frequency, I could talk to them at the same time. Well, the police officer took the radio off my person, used it for a drug deal with an unknown person, and blamed me for it.
This is an undercover police officer?
No, this is a police officer in plain clothes.
Was this a police officer who was doing it in order to affect the drug bust, or was he simply trying to get some drugs for himself?
Either one, I don't know.
Do we know the name of the police officer?
Yes, it's Byerly, Officer Byerly.
Indeed. Well, Officer, I think it's not quite the right pronunciation of his name, but... I think I know who you're talking about. The officer wishes to call into the show and defend his reputation will be the first to receive his call. So regarding the camping, so there you were, criminally in jail for loitering with intent to use a radio, or letting a cop use your radio for a drug deal. Did you actually have this officer in court testify? Or?
Yes, I did.
And did he acknowledge that he did the drug deal with the radio?
Yes, he did.
How was it that you were involved with that? Because you lent your radio?
I didn't lend my radio to him. He grabbed the radio off my person, my personal property.
Did he claim that you lent him the radio?
No.
How were you then linked with this sinister behavior by this officer of the law?
Because the officer took the radio off my person, my personal property, which no officer has no right to. Took it off my person and made a drug deal with an unknown assailant with no name said on the radio whatsoever.
And what judge found you guilty of this?
No judge found me guilty. I beat the charge because I wasn't doing the crime.
Well, you said that you were jailed for 5 months for a
parole violation.
Same charge, right? Loitering
with charge. For the same charge.
So you had a trial. You were found not guilty, and then you went before a parole hearing and they found you guilty by preponderance of the evidence.
Yes, they did.
With the same testimony or different testimony?
The same testimony.
And who's the judge in that case?
It was a commissioner. I don't know his name.
Joseph?
I have no idea. They had
Department 1?
No. Parole you don't go to the courthouse for. They go to the jail facility.
So, and you say that you just got out of jail after 5 months in jail?
Yeah, because I get half time, so I'm supposed to do 100 days off the 5 months. In the jail facility on January 25th, I was supposed to go to court. The county jail didn't take me to court. And then I got released from Santa Rita County Jail in Alameda County with a warrant out for me for a camping ticket.
And the camping ticket predated all this?
Yes, it did. It predated back in December.
So all this happened up in Alameda or in Santa Cruz County?
This happened right here in Santa Cruz County.
So how did you get up into Alameda?
That's where they send parole violators that are not taking their deals. They sent him to Santa Rita is what we call it, because that's a Santa Rita County Jail. And we stay there until we get shipped to or transferred to Tracy or DVI State Prison. And I spent my whole time in Santa Rita over this charge that I beat in court.
Or as we used to say, see you in Santa Rita, going to go to jail, as we used to say back in 1991. But that's not a story. So, your question to me originally this evening was that how could they pick you up on a camping violation when the warrant was already out as you left jail? They might have missed it, would be my answer.
No, because I talked to the community service officer, Pam, and she issued me a ticket to clear the warrant up, but I still got to go to court for it. Why do I have to go to court and clear this ticket up when they should have took me to court to begin with?
I was in custody.
Why didn't they do it then?
Well, they might have claimed, A, they overlooked it, B, the warrant had not yet been issued because the process was so slow. You have the date of the warrant when the warrant was issued?
No, I don't.
Because that might have been the reason. But it's kind of weird that now this is a... It is an adequate reason to say that you were in custody at the time for you to defend against the crime of failure to appear. I would, again, encourage anybody with a camping ticket, if they have the stamina to do it, disqualify referee basket, which is where the tickets usually go, the basement of the county building, under your one preemptive challenge to a judge, or peremptory challenge, I should say, which is under 170.6 CCP, hard to remember, but not so hard, 170.6 CCP, and then, or just tell them you want to disqualify the judge, the referee, take it up to a real judge, and in that court, well, you can defend the camping ticket. Of course, you may be found guilty on the camping ticket, but if the officer doesn't come to court, of course, you will be found not guilty.
Okay, but I still don't understand why they didn't take me to court.
I can't say. As I said, it may have been because the warrant was issued after you left court, because the process was so slow. It could have been because they overlooked the warrant. It could have been... Why did Pam Bechtel stop you at all?
Because she knows my face, and...
She decided she would run one on you, so to speak.
Yes, she did.
You look like a criminal type, particularly with that hat. I'm going to have to call Pam over here. Pam? I guess she's not on. That was somebody else, so... We've been talking with that known camping criminal.
Robert Valencia.
Señor Valencia, mucho gusto de conocerlo.
Sí.
Gracias. You've also been banned from the mall for loitering with intent to allow a police officer to seize your radio?
Yeah, basically, parole told me in my stipulations that I'm not allowed within 100 feet of Pacific Avenue Mall. And
so I'm not really talking to you now, or this is merely an illusion.
It's merely an illusion.
We're not specifying exactly where you are. We haven't really said exactly what's going on. You could be here, you could be there, you could be anywhere.
Yes. I got almost picked up last Saturday because an officer saw me on the mall. He said the only reason why I didn't go to jail is because he couldn't contact parole.
So anytime you come down on the mall, you risk arrest because you might indeed be facilitating another officer's attempt to use a forbidden radio, or I should say, their code name for it, loitering with intent to engage in drug activity.
That's right.
Well, I don't think I can be further seen loitering with you anymore. Thank you, Robert, and good luck in the lockup.
Yeah, thank you.
One of the reasons that you would need to be on the mall is because on evenings like tonight, there is food on the mall and not elsewhere.
Yeah, and also, I mean, my parole officer told me I'm supposed to go to the River Street Shelter to eat breakfast and dinner. And today I went there, and I got sick. I've been sick all day. Now,
because of the food there?
Because of the food. I got an ulcer, and then the food there is messed up.
What kind of food did you have?
I had eggs, cheese, mushrooms, and onions and stuff. I don't know what else they put in that little goulash, but that's what they fed us.
And how soon after that were you sick?
I was sick within, I'd say, 2 or 3 hours, and I've been throwing up ever since.
Have you had this experience before with their food, or is this sort of the first time?
I had this experience before with their food.
And yet you continue to go back. Are you a glutton for punishment?
I have no choice. My parole officer says that's where I have to eat, and I eat there, and it's going to put me in the hospital. And I can't be on Pacific Avenue when they got the feeding down here. And that just makes me, you know, it's going to put me in the hospital, but yet it's my trouble.
Sneak over to the Safe event. I hear in front of New Leaf, they have this food which they serve, this delicious, hot, tasty soup which shows up, which is reported to be very helpful and yummy.
Yeah, but then I get
violated. It's a sickening situation, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is.
We're here at the Safe event number...
Man, I think it might be 65.
And what's happening? I see that... The old Safe singers are come and gone. You're the only... Where's the old Meriwether Mike, the promise of Valerie, the aged Joe Williams, Conundrum? Where are all these people?
Well, Mike was here helping scoop out soup, making sure everything was getting out to everybody, the bread and everything, and I was playing, and I think what we've gotten is
some really down, dirty, real street performers have come over and played. You know, they're the ones who are getting the soup. They're the ones who are tucking away in the corners of buildings and hanging out on the street trying to make a buck so they can keep going. And it's really great to hear these kind of musicians getting involved in SAFE.
I see about 15 people, and I recognize Dennis the Bard here. But, for example, the man who's strumming, I don't recognize. What's his name?
I didn't get his name yet. I'm just...
You allow unknown musicians to seize the sacred podium of SAFE?
Oh, all these people are my brothers, man. You know, I'm just enjoying their company. Their music is all I need to be here, you know, and that's fine with me. I mean... It's kind of not exactly a social thing yet. It's just been playing music so far, you know, kind of casual, you know, just hanging out.
I see there's hot soup here.
Yeah, really good soup. I had to go all the way down to the Deanza mobile home where he was giving, Joe was doing some meal for the UN or something, UN group of some kind, and even making up soup for the homeless at the same time. And so I had to drive down there and get the soup. But, you know, it was a perfect night for getting some soup out.
It rained earlier today. Luckily, the sky is...
It's been threatening to rain again tonight, but we were lucky. We've been lucky so far. Really lucky, so...
Any reports from the street of questionable behavior by our armed police officers?
I don't think there's been too much that I've heard.
Oh, good. We won't gild the lily or look the the gift in the face, or is it the horse in the nose, or whatever. We're talking with
Randy.
And Randy, you say today has been a test for you, or a testy test for you?
Today's been a very testy day. Everyone's been on their edge, like on the edge of the razor, ready to explode.
So you're on your bike. You got your cigarette with you. Sleep out last night?
Basically, yeah.
No hassles there?
Not really. Well, actually, yeah. This morning I was woke up by someone who got in my face and told me I couldn't piss there, and it was in my face like they wanted to fight me, and I almost got in a fight first thing this morning, and that's not a good beginning of the day.
It wasn't a police officer there?
No, it wasn't a police officer.
A fellow camper?
No, some guy who had his woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Or the wrong side of the sleeping bag?
Yeah, so to speak.
Well, any points of light in this rather checkered situation?
I love Santa Cruz and I love the vibe here, but the vibe today has been very unusual. It's been testy. It's needed patience to get through what people are coming at me with, their vibrations, but I'm dealing with it quite nicely.
Thank you, Randy.
And thank you, brother.
Street interviews, and indeed SAFE, Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression, the group that plays in front of New Leaf Market, has been playing pretty regularly every Wednesday evening, 6 at 9 or 10 o'clock, and they also serve hot soup, and occasionally there's some political literature there. Used to be a huff table there regularly. I think they got rained out for the first time ever last night, so for the first time in about over a year, they weren't there. But who knows? Maybe next Wednesday they'll be back there again. They're kind of a familiar part of the scene now down on the Pacific Avenue sidewalk. They sing some rather unique songs. And, hey, could that be a caller? For heaven's sakes, let's see what's happening here. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hey, Robert. Matthew here.
Hey, Matthew.
Hey, man. I was just going to say that, music itself, like songs, and these songs that you hear people play, to me, I'm much more concerned about how they're expressed and the means with which songs are expressed rather than the content of the specific opinion that someone is saying.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
Maybe. Give us a little more.
Well, or just like, because you hear certain things on free radio, if something in someone's opinion that is homophobic, or, and I think this affects the homeless, this affects us all, man, because this is aesthetics, you know what I mean? You have people saying faggot MC or something like this over the air in a song, and then the fucking, the phones go crazy, and there's many different people offended. But to my mind, when a song, it could be, you know, stating something about the Palestinians or whatever the higgle that all these people agree with, but it's stated so terribly and aesthetically badly, that concerns me way more than any certain opinion that is expressed in song. And I believe it's kind of like the thought police, and kind of sad that people are that touchy that they can't hear faggot MC in a song. They don't have to like it, and they can make their thing against it, but let's not try to, like, censor it. And
well, I'm
like,
afraid I can't allow you to say the words faggot again on the air. We're going to have to not only censor you, we're sending someone to your house.
I know, exactly, because you were saying the word in context of a gentleman calling himself nigger, feeling that he was
right.
That he was being treated that way. I've heard in phrases the honky included in a phrase with the N-word in one sentence.
Uh-huh.
In one sentence, everybody. That is like the height of absolute identity politics stupidity.
Hmm.
And I'm so sick of fucking identity politics right now. It has its validity, but it is kindergarten for people. Let's stop identifying with these little groupings, which include women and men and hermaphrodites and intersex individuals, everybody. Gender is totally included in identity politics, and it just bugs the shit out of me that there's no inkling on the horizon of for certain of these people that I hear of even wanting to move beyond it. They want to furthermore identify with a term that has been foisted upon them by an oppressive culture. They want to further identify with
Matthew,
it.
I expect you to be out there on the mall doing some singing on this subject later tonight.
Oh, man, and it's going to be aesthetically very pleasing, as well as it'll be very correct opinions.
All right, but whatever you do, don't sing within, you know, 10 feet of a building with a display device, or I may have to arrest you. Okay?
I won't, and one teeny little point that's more to the... to what you were already talking about, I think it's really valid, all the legal work that's done with basically observing the rights that we already have. And I think it's a sad state of affairs that we have to point to any certain amendments or these other things, these constitutional higgly-wiggly, to basically just acknowledge the fact that these are rights that we just hold naturally that don't need to be given to us by any government.
Hear, hear.
All right, and thanks for your show, Robert.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Matthew.
Okay, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, phone line's open, 427-3772. I've been spending a lot of time, I did spend a lot of time a couple weeks ago on Tent University. Again, a good place to catch some updates on that is on Indie Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Most everybody who listens to the show regularly knows about Santa Cruz Indie Media, but... of course, we are a radio and internet show, and some of you out there haven't heard us before and probably haven't gone to the Indie Media website before. That's www.santacruz, one word, small letters, santacruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, indymedia.org. And that has a lot of local stuff from Santa Cruz and, indeed, throughout the country. There are different Indie Medias where you can actually post your own stories. And there's been a lot of stuff on Tent University. That was the university that was held April 18th through the 22nd on campus, at the base of campus, brutally assaulted by police on the evening of April 18th. We did a lot of recording from there. Charges against the students were eventually dropped. There's still issues about whether the students are going to be face disciplinary consequences on campus, whether there's going to be any consequences for the administration officials who ordered this fiasco, this brutal fiasco, or for the officers who carried it out. And I've got some more recording I'm going to be running through about right now on sort of follow-up on that issue. I'm also going to be playing later in the evening a press release. I'm not going to be playing. I'm going to be reading a press release and the resolution passed last night by the Arcata City Council on a resistance to the Iraqi war, which is much, much stronger and much more significant than what Rotkin has had any even inkling of talking about. Although last night, I have to say, Mike Rotkin was down there at the Vets Hall, to a packed Vets Hall, I understand, supporting Camilo Mejia, who I may be pronouncing improperly, don't know, the... war resistor. And hats off to Mejia. It's hard for me to take my hat off to Rotkin because even though he did declare it a Mejia Day, and I you know, that's certainly commendable, he has essentially resisted any kind of resolution let's say he certainly hasn't initiated any resolution against the Iraqi war for the last 2 years, which seems to me a real shame. And it took Representative Farr, of all people, who himself had to be dragged kind of kicking and screaming to the table by the rest of us, who is supporting a somewhat weakened resolution, the Woolsey resolution, that says, you know, let's get together a plan to look at how to withdraw from Iraq. And the council then kind of quietly endorsed that, our city council, instead of endorsing some real measures like declaring this a war-free zone, if you will, where people who don't want to commit war crimes, as up in Arcata, can come to, or investigate what kind of investments are being made by the city in war corporations that should not be, we should stop, or where we should be investing in terms of that, making that transparent and educating the community about where the city is investing its money. Now, the same $650,000 that Rotkin and his council majority don't mind dumping into the Santa Cruz Coast Hotel project prior to a meaningful public dialogue or discussion on the issue. And then, of course, they ram it through the city council, and then it requires a referendum effort to stop it. And, of course, then they run with their tail between their legs because they know they're not going to win. Northwest Hospitality Group ran in that regard. Anyway, Tent University, getting back to what I started, is a subject I think is very inspiring to me because of the way the students and the community stood up to an attempted repression. Pretty brutal. Pretty nitty-gritty repression. We're going to torture you until you leave. Kind of repression. Pretty horrible stuff. And some people criticize my calling this kind of Abu Ghraib tactics. And I pointed out, I concede it's not done over a period of days. It's not done, you know, in the privacy of cells. And it's not done to interrogate people. But it is a form of using pain and torture to get people to abandon their right to assemble. It is brutal shit. And there's been no accountability for it, I guess. Chancellor Denton appeared with Rotkin this afternoon at City Council. I wasn't there. I'm getting a copy of it on videotape. I thought it was going to be the same old mutual backpatting and a little arm wrestling, but no accountability either of the Santa Cruz Police Force that was involved in that April 18th affair, the brutalization of mostly students, some community members as well, the intimidation and chilling of the entire campus, and I would say the entire town, because that's what that kind of police action does. It makes people afraid. I'm sorry to say that Pat True's hunger strike ended a couple days ago. I mean, I'm glad for him. I mean, it's time he had a good meal. But I'm not aware that he really got any kind of a substantial response from the chancellor or from anybody else. And maybe that was the reason he stopped it. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll get the word from him on what went on. He was on the air last Sunday, a long interview, you may remember, in the morning, and I was pleased to give it to him, and I'm glad he did make the showing he did do. And I understand he was circulating a petition calling for the recall or perhaps the replacement of the Chancellor Denton. Sounds like a pretty good idea to me, not just for this most recent outrage, but for other things, but certainly for this naked use of terror to stop people from assembling at night in a peaceful manner to further an educational enterprise on campus with the rest of the community. It's really pretty frightening. Let's see what we got here. I believe we are going to be listening to some more interviews from Tent University now, which may throw some more light. This is about a week or two old, but still worth listening to. Stay with me.
I don't want to say Q member. I will be attacked immediately, but what's your name?
Brigitara Isis.
And what is Q, Brigitara?
Coalition of University Employees.
And just what are you trying to do? Just cause grief to our poor chancellor? What's happening?
Actually, I work with children, young children. I'm a teacher, and we're classified clerical. We're all wondering why we're not in the professional status. I have a bachelor's degree, and I teach. I've been in early childhood for 30 years.
Why wanted to pay you when we can pay you cheaper?
Right. Put us in a lower classification so we get less money. We found out that we get paid less than the people that clean our rooms. at the university. So that's basically why we are out here supporting.
You do a joint union with the people who clean your rooms.
We do. Actually, we did a Simply Strike with AskMe recently. And our strike's going to be pretty soon, and probably in a few weeks, we're hoping.
I hope you don't try to camp at the base of campus.
Probably not after what we've seen with the violence and the police brutality that we saw on TV, actual footage. But we are going to strike, and we're going to, you know, ask for higher wages, more respect, living wages, actually.
You'll go home rather than camp, because that would mean you might actually risk confrontation with the police.
Well, actually, we're going to be striking. I'm not sure how many days, but we'll be out, like with AskMe, like they did. I guess they got their contract.
Specific demands are likely to be
higher wages, more respect.
What would that translate into, more respect?
Well, giving us the pay we deserve, giving us raises like we were promised, which we didn't get 2 years in a row. Step raises.
It's a tight budget. I mean, there are real financial needs. I mean, what about the moving expenses that the chancellor's new partner required? I mean, there are problems here.
Yes, and then I guess there were $780-something million that we were in surplus last year that was supposed to go to pay raises that no one got. Just kind
mistakes will happen. We'll take care of it. Don't worry about it.
Right.
So what are you here for today?
I'm here to support the students, because they supported us when we had our strike, and I really feel like the students are here trying to get an education, and a lot of our TAs that work with us are in great financial stress trying to go to school, and they have lots of loans out trying to make it through education, and then they've raised the tuition, so a lot of them are so stressed out it's hard enough to even go to school, but then having to worry about finances. It's really hard on them, so I'm here to support the students and let them know that those of us that work here, the teachers that work with them, really support them.
It's probably going to end tonight after with a platform and so forth, but I did speak to one organizer who suggested that if the chancellor didn't show up, he was inviting her, that there might be general sentiment to spend the night here. Would you be supportive of that?
I have no comment on that. I don't know what would happen. I feel like whatever the students...
Does the right to assemble end at 8 o'clock at night? Is that your feeling?
Well, I'm not sure. I heard that it was illegal to actually camp overnight here, and I'm not sure of the laws, but if it was legal to camp here, I would think they should be able to do it. But
they made a law that made it illegal to speak here. I mean, would you accept that?
I'd protest it, I'm sure, but...
Right. That's the question. Well, anything you want to say for Free Radio? I've been throwing this stuff at you.
Just we need lots of unity. We need lots of support. We need grassroots work all around the world to support us so that we can change society, so that we can all have healthy, happy children for the future. We need to save our environment. We need to save humans for the future.
Not to mention, get the fuck out of Iraq.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, a little detail.
Yeah, there's a lot. But I feel like there's a lot going on right now in the country and in the world. I feel like in order to really cleanse and purify the planet, it looks like there's a lot of things that have to be changed, a lot of things that are coming up. The truth is coming out finally. And hopefully people will wake up and realize what's truth and what is lies and push for the truth.
We've been talking with?
Pardon?
Your name again.
Brigitara Isis.
Thanks, Brigitara.
Thank you. Okay.
So it's about 4:05 on April 19th up here at the Tent UC. We're talking with
Colin Brown.
Colin, you say you were released from the captivity, what, about 6:30, 7:30?
About 6:30, 7:30, probably 7.
Want to describe the process of the arrest and then what happened subsequently?
Well, all the, like, riot cops marched into the tent and started surrounding people. And they used pain compliance on everyone.
What did that involve?
For me, they were choking me. They were tweaking my arms around to, like, almost a breaking point. They were twisting my fingers back and forth. That was basically it. And then, like, once I couldn't sit down anymore, and, like, didn't have any more energy, they just pulled me up and dragged me to the car.
They actually dragged you all the way?
Yeah.
He went limp.
Yeah. And then we had to sit in, like, the paddy wagon for about an hour while they kept arresting people. And then they moved us to a TAPS van up on campus a little bit.
What is a TAPS van?
That's, like, the university shuttle bus. And then we moved down to the police station after about an hour of sitting in there. And they processed us.
What did that involve?
They put, like, shackles on my feet, and I had to, like, sit in this chair, and they just came over and, like, took all my information. And then filled out some paperwork and put me in a holding cell from about, I don't know what time it was, but I probably spent a good 5 hours in there.
This is all on campus?
No, this is the holding cell and all that's down at the jail.
The county jail.
Yeah. And then we sat there for a while. And they let us go.
What were you charged with?
Trespassing.
Are you a student here?
Yeah.
What year are you?
I'm a second year.
And did you hear a warning to disperse?
Well, when the cops first came and started asking over the make, I found that it was an unlawful assembly and everyone here was going to get arrested. I don't know if it was a warning to disperse or not, but that's what they said.
And how many people were arrested in the main?
I think about 20. None of us had our rights read to us. We asked them repeatedly to have our rights read to us, and they wouldn't do it. We asked them if we were being arrested or detained, and they wouldn't answer us.
Like the last 5 years.
Right. Were you injured? Not unless they're interrogating you, then they have to tell you. Were you injured yourself?
My chest hurts pretty bad right now, and some of my joints are kind of stiff. I got a really bad headache. But that's about it.
So why does your chest hurt?
I don't know. It might be from laying on the cement in the holding cell all night, but I'm not sure. It could be a number of things. The pain compliance, maybe.
How is the spirits of the people who were arrested as they went to jail?
They were very high spirits. They felt really supported by everyone. There was a jail solidarity demonstration outside the jail that was really inspiring. We could hear them deep inside the building. Everyone was really positive and staying strong together.
Do you have a court date?
Yeah, it's on May 15th, I believe.
Okay. Was anyone in your group injured in a clear way, or did you want to comment on how people were physically treated and what the reaction was after they were in custody? Are any of them suffering from the same kinds of or similar kinds of discomfort or aftermath?
Yeah, everyone definitely experienced the same kind of discomfort. They didn't really give us water at all. The holding cells were, like, really, really cold, but they wouldn't let us wear any layers, so we all had to be in there in T-shirts. Everyone was just about as beat up as I was.
Have you been threatened with the administration with any kind of additional penalties, such as suspension, expulsion, spanking?
Not yet, but I expect I will be.
How did you feel when you heard that the entire protest, even though there were 200 or 300 people, perhaps not that many, but certainly a sizable number of new people arrived after you were all arrested, after the police left, were essentially encouraged to leave the site and not maintain the campsites? How did you feel about that?
I think that, of course, they're going to tell us to leave. They don't want us here in the first place. They don't want us voicing our opinions or our minds.
I'm talking about the leaders of the protest who said leave.
Well, no comment on that yet since I haven't talked to any leaders.
Fair enough. There's been no discussion of that today? Or?
No, not yet. I just got here.
Well, welcome to Tent U.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say to folks out there about what happened yesterday and what you plan to do tonight?
This is a perfect example of oppression, the fact that we actually don't have free speech on this campus, and it just proves that we need to do even more about it now.
Thanks.
Thank you.
So, it's about 4:15, and I'm looking around the area, and there's about 10, 20, maybe 30 students
and
three or four groups. A group of police officers or uniformed police people. Looks like UCP police, UCD police, UC... SC police Channel News, Channel NBC News has two vans over parked near the Stone House, where we're also parked. And there's a Situationist workshop going on here in the main tent, which has about 20 participants who are checking out the scene. Two tents are still up. The large tent where the Situationist workshop is taking, it's actually a rectangular structure about 12 feet high. And then another structure with a tent over by the road, closer to the road, closer to High Street. And there's a booth with sort of info for people. And you get your occasional solidarity honk happening here. We're talking with
Nathaniel.
Nathaniel, you're here in the info tent, surrounded by papers of all sorts. A bullhorn, marking pens, flyers. And there's even, as I mentioned before, a class going on. But you said that the schedule for Tuesday today has a lot of classes scheduled. Israeli-Palestinian workshop, freestyling workshop, trans-community collaboration. Some of these classes happened and some didn't.
Actually, I was up working, so I don't know if it happened and didn't. But I heard that one of my friends up there said his class that was going to come down here tomorrow, they canceled and they're just going to be in their normal location.
Because?
The professor didn't say, but I think it had to do with pressure from the administration not to hold classes down here on professors.
I noticed that you have a visible presence of about four police officers here, several squad cars. I think that's deterring members of the community from enjoying themselves to the fullest?
I'm not scared of them. I don't know. Like, I think the people that are coming out, they want to come out, and all of this daytime activity has been permitted from the beginning, that this shouldn't deter anyone.
Well, I spoke to the support group for a band that was supposed to play here, and I was told the university had told them they couldn't play here.
I guess so. I think there's negotiations going on about that as we speak.
The band was scheduled to play, I guess, about 20 minutes ago, according to what I was told, and I hear no music. What can I say?
The administration evidently has said that it can't happen. I think we're going to try to move them up to the quarry, but I'm not the one to talk to about that.
Dig it. Thank you.
Yeah, cool.
Don't mean to put you on the spot, but here you are in the info booth.
I am in the info booth. That's true.
Well, we're in the 7-Eleven, two blocks from Tent City, UC. Talking. Sure, let's walk around. Let's walk around. What's your name?
Ingrid.
And Ingrid, you were saying that good number of thoughts about Tent University. You weren't there last night, but you may be there tonight, and you supported the concept.
Definitely, and from what I understood, it was supposed to be a positive atmosphere where everybody could come together and share and create, both community members and faculty and students. And from what I understand, and like I said, I wasn't there last night, it turned into a not very positive atmosphere in my eyes.
The police attempted to break it, break it up.
Right,
it was very positive before they arrived. I was there last night.
Right, and just given the stigma around, like, you know, police arrests and everything that comes there, you know, like, you have the police that come on the scene, and immediately people get defensive, you know, and I can understand that.
You say two of your instructors have already kind of pulled out?
Yeah, two of my instructors pulled out, definitely.
What kinds of classes were they going to be teaching?
One is called Radical Italy, which looks at... I mean, it's not the teachers that necessarily pulled out. I mean, it was a collective decision made. It was a collective decision with the class and with the students and faculty to attend Tent University. And it was a collective decision. It was a decision made ultimately by the faculty, by the instructors, that they needed to pull out just given the situation.
Just these two classes, or did you hear of others?
These are the only two I know of, just because, like I said, I knew that we had planned on attending.
One was Radical Italy.
Radical Italy, and the other was a Dante, and we never got confirmation from our teacher.
Dante the writer?
Dante Alighieri. And we never got confirmation from our teacher that we would be heading down there, but she seemed into the idea, and, you know, after today's after last night's...
brutal attack on the students?
Well, if you want to say that, I wasn't there.
That's how it looked to me.
Okay, so you were there, so you can say.
Yeah,
You know, we were told.
Have you seen a video of what happened?
I haven't seen a video yet. I certainly know plenty of people that were there and involved, and I'm about to head up there, and I don't know what time it is, half an hour or so. And I'll be having one of my classes will be held down there.
Oh, well, so there is still one instructor wants to come down.
Yeah,
what class is that?
This is for my ESLP class. It's ESLP, the main title is Sustainable Living, and the section is Spiritual Ecology and Cosmocentrism. And these people are totally into this scene. A lot of organizers and...
What year are you?
Junior transfer.
And what's your field of specialization, if any?
Of this specialization that I'm talking about?
What's your major?
What's my major? Community studies.
Oh.
Yeah.
Watch out, Mike Rutkin.
No, why?
No,
my instructor last quarter. I
talked to him this morning. He's a mayor who supports the anti-homeless laws. I've always been at odds with him on that and a number of other issues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he is as an instructor. I understand he's pretty liberal as an instructor, which is a different story. As a politician, he really sucks.
Well, his class is actually set up very similarly to this one, that it's going to be held at Tent U. And I really do appreciate that that new sort of exploration of education, you know, and the atmospheres in which you can learn.
Do you think your class is going to be open for other students to attend, or are they just...
Oh, most certainly. Yeah, I mean, definitely.
I mean, slip in and take a listen.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, that's always an option with our class. And I would say with actually all the classes I've taken so far at UC Santa Cruz have been like this. They haven't been a sort of exclusive...
You've been here for 3 years.
No.
I transferred in.
Transfer. So,
and we're talking with
Ingrid.
Thanks, Ingrid. Anything you want to conclude with?
I don't know. I'm on the spot. Fumbling
the words. You've done good. I mean, I appreciate it. I eavesdropped on your conversation and asked you, and you were reluctant at first, but then you agreed, so I appreciate it.
Yeah. What's your name?
I'm Robert. Robert Norris.
Okay. Well, nice to meet you.
And that was the day after the destruction of the free assembly rights up on campus. And I had wandered into the 7-Eleven to fill up my monster coffee cup with cocoa or some such thing and talk to this student. It kind of recalls to mind the many little examples of chilling that happened as a consequence of the police repression and the student surrender to the police repression. The fact that instead of holding their ground and remaining and maintaining their camp overnight, they abandoned it and it did what the university requested them essentially to do, which is leave a skeleton crew there and, you know, hike up to the quarry or, I guess, down to the jail for jailhouse support, all without any real consensus from the people who had been maintaining the right to assemble on campus. And it had all kinds of consequences, I think. I mean, there was talk about, oh, we're going to do all kinds of other things later in the week, and, oh, it's a temporary decision, but it wasn't. It was a real turning point, as far as I can see. You can hear how professors canceled classes that were going to be up there. I talked to one faculty advisor who actually was holding office hours up there, but she did not want her name mentioned. And she was quite candid off camera and off mic in saying that the reason she didn't was because she really was seriously afraid of retaliation. She was pretty out. I mean, she was willing to be there, obviously, to be visibly public there, but she was unwilling to have her name mentioned on the radio. Then, of course, there was the case of the band that had been scheduled to play, but suddenly their plug was pulled. This was in the afternoon, and it wasn't like there was a noise problem. It wasn't like 3 in the morning or 10 at night. It was 4 in the afternoon. All these kind of small constrictions of freedom that happened as a consequence of, well, I mean, obviously it was a consequence of fear by the community, by the students, by the faculty, by the organizers of the return of the police. I mean, and it's a very real thing. It's not just they're going to beat you up and put you in jail. But you're going to, you know, you have your career threatened, your future threatened, your educational progress threatened, not to mention have your tent destroyed and dragged off and things of that sort, and have your property seized, and who knows what happens to it. In another vein, you know, this is all past history. This is weeks ago. It's kind of ancient history now. I mean, you know, it happened. And I commented on it at the time. There's still some discussion going on the Internet, and I kind of fire up my word processor and, you know, hustle onto the Internet to make a comment or two. And I say so on the air, what I, you know, my response or my feelings are about it. But I really was very much inspired by the way people, students who had never been arrested before, took a form of torture that I've never taken. I have never been tortured by police the way these students were tortured. It was quite something to watch. You can call it, you know, using adequate force to move them to the van, but you got to look at the videotapes to see them screaming and see what they're doing. They call putting pepper spray on the eyes of demonstrators back in the late 90s, you know, to get them out of a congressman's office and in the demonstration again to stop the logging. A form of, you know, simply force. It's not force. It's a form of torture and pain to compel compliance. And to see them standing up to this, or I should say sitting down to this and not striking back, but just standing firm, sitting firm, holding firm, and everybody else supporting them, and then winning was just something incredible to see. And then to see it all being given away was something even worse. But the fact that it could be done, it could be won, is a lesson for the future, and I hope it happens again. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides. And the call-in number, if you want to be part of any discussion here, is 427-3772. Let's see what we got here. Let me see if I can go back to the streets for a bit. Oh, let's go to the phones first. Hello, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Jane.
Jane Kaiser of PERC.
Yes.
That's Patients Inmates Rights Collective. Or is it Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective?
Psychiatric Inmates Rights Collective. And speaking about force and torture, PERC has a library display up this month at the Central Library in Santa Cruz.
What's that display about?
Well, we've been putting displays about the forced treatment of the mental health system and psychiatry for the last 25 years on the subject of the toxic psychiatric meds, electroshock, restraints, things like that.
Forced incarceration.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's in the main library, and where do you find that display?
Well, it's just inside the library. It's the large case, glass case. And if anybody wants to, contact me for perhaps having, you know, helping with the next psychiatric, anti-psychiatric display, they can contact us.
That's great. Your number, of course, is?
Yeah, 475-7904.
475-7904. You know, what you might do is add to that display a kind of a notebook for comments.
So right. We've been doing that. We've been leaving... And the comments of the public are very, very interesting. But, yeah, we've been keeping track of that.
Interesting. I know that you also go down to the, what do you call them, the writ hearings where people are trying to get out of being held against their will on 5150s and 5250s and so forth.
Yeah, they're held every Tuesday at 1:30. They're called the LPS hearings, and people who contest conservatorship or who are... like putting in a writ of habeas corpus to get out of the locked ward at Dominican, go there for their hearings. And the last, I went Tuesday with some people, and what happened, they had something like 12 people contesting and 2 people with writs.
Well, that's pretty unusual, isn't it?
No, this is how they stream them through. Because the people that they have that say they're contesting conservatorship, somehow they either force or coerce or whatever them to change their mind or threaten them or whatever the deal is. And so usually a person who really wants to be out of a locked facility such as 7th Avenue and really wants to be off conservatorship and all that goes with that, unless they have somebody by their side almost going, walking through with them all this, you know, all the road toward court, usually they don't make it even to court.
So what was the, but those who did make it, these were...
None of them made it to court. The LPS hearings were over in 5 or 10 minutes.
So this
nobody
were
showing up.
So these were done without any of the defendants present? Huh?
Absolutely.
I thought that there was one person who you actually was going to take
it
to court.
Well, or they'll let you out if they don't want to, you know, make you, if... They sometimes will make you, they'll let you out before your writ hearing, and
so,
that was a writ hearing.
So they don't want to actually get defeated in court, so they let you out beforehand if you stand your ground.
So, yes, and that's why we always tell people the first thing you get in there, you fill out a writ.
Wow, maybe we should have some classes outside now to fill out a writ. Hmm?
Oh, yes, there's a lot of things, and hopefully per this month I'll schedule... Near the end of the month, a public hearing, public meeting at the library meeting room upstairs, so that anyone interested in, you know, knowing more of the ins and outs from people who've been there.
When is this?
We haven't gotten it scheduled yet.
Because
I have to call up the library and see when they have an hour free.
You know, we've had some discussion in the last couple of weeks about. Proposition 165, I guess it is, or is it 163, actually, I think it is. The, you know...
Proposition 63.
63, thank you. The proposition which essentially provided a millionaire tax that funded what some claimed were going to be voluntary psychiatric services for some homeless people and also other people as the... You know, the budget crunch comes down, and now we find the real concerns that these funds are going to be used for involuntary, the kinds of treatment. And you actually warned about this way back in October when we talked about this in the studio, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're you know, starting to test newborns and with that will come the labels. And they'll expand their business.
Well, I know that
they'll have a lot of human specimens to research their medications and and upcoming new technological whatever.
Do you know if there's any indication that Santa Cruz County is going to opt in to AB 1421's loosening of the protections against being held against your will? You know, there's this AB 1421 is provided for a situation where if the county agrees, you can be, you know, there's this involuntary outpatient therapy, needles on wheels. They can, you know, they don't have to find you a danger to yourself, danger to others, or gravely disabled. They have to find you likely to become so. Or,
yeah, and that's one of the tricks of psychiatry is...
But my question, Jane, is do you know if the county is going to be opting into this? Has there been any indication from, I don't know, the psychiatric services or from other people you know in this field that the county is going to want to do this? In the past, money has prevented it, but you also, I think, have to have some kind of affirmative vote by the Board of Supervisors. Do you know anything about this?
Well, right now my mind is just so full of so many.
Okay.
Ideas on this whole thing. I wasn't really ready for like an interview.
I
just wanted to say that there is that library display up there.
Okay.
And that if anybody wants further information on any of these details, you know, I probably surely could find them even in print. And I was thinking back on 63, one thing that the commission did was that in passing Proposition 3, it made itself a commission in perpetuity. that this Commission on Mental Health, who designates, you know, what's going to be happening pretty much, is just making mental health and psychiatry even stronger with a wider reach than they've ever known before. And the whole idea of, you know, a potential danger to self or others, well, just in the label, as soon as a person is given a label that is considered to be a mental disease, they then are potentially, so to speak, harmful to themselves or others. You know, it's by definition, almost. And it's the most prejudicial way of treating a whole group of people, you know, that I can imagine.
Gotcha. Well, Jane, if people want to get in touch with you, they can give you a call,
475. Sure, and I'm also the second to the last K in the phone book.
Jane Kiser, K-Y-S-O-R, and that's 475-7904.
Right.
Thanks, Jane.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. A quick announcement, Anarchist Cafe, Saturday, May 7th, what the sign on the bulletin board says here, 6 p.m. to midnight at 742 North Brant's 40. Benefit for the magazine Anarchy, a journal of desire armed. And looks like lots of speakers, potluck dinner, entertainment, Blackbird Rom, People's Puppet Theater, groups from, looks like, workshops, Nietzsche, Revolutionary Communities, Tools and Strategies, Surveillance and Counter-Surveillance, Prisoner Support, California Anarchist Prisoner Solidarity, Wilderness and Street First Aid, Speakers, A Critique of the Left, and Struggles in Argentina. How about Struggles in Santa Cruz? Or have we got any of those struggles? I don't know. We need some of those struggles. Yesterday, as I mentioned before, Mejia Camillo spoke at the Vets Hall, sliding scale, packed house. Rotkin gave 15 minutes to himself to introduce him and declared it a national or local Memorial Day for Camillo, Mejia. But, of course, nothing was done more broadly, declaring the city a sanctuary, nor has there been any effort made in that regard yet. Here, however, is an email I got from Arcata. Press release from Dave Meserve, who's a city council member up there. And I'm going to read it. Arcata City Council adopts municipal response to federal lawlessness resolution. Arcata, California, May 5th. The Arcata City Council last night adopted a resolution that commits the council to do anything within its power to influence the federal government to end immediately the American occupation of Iraq and, quote, to support both those residents who have returned from serving in Iraq and those who have refused to serve for moral or legal reasons. The resolution affirms that the City Council is our most locally accessible governmental body and the most direct political connection between individuals and the federal government. It budgets $1,000 annually to a newly mandated City Peace Commission that will inform returning troops about locally available services and inform troops that refuse to serve in Iraq about the possible outcomes of their choice and about their access to free legal counsel. Wow. The commission will also work, quote, to limit access of military recruiters to school and college campuses and to provide equal time for views offering alternatives to military service. The resolution was adopted by a 3-2 vote with Green Party council members Groves, Meserve, and Pitino, if I got that right, in favor, and Machi and Wheatley opposed. The vote came near midnight after a marathon public comment period that lasted for over 2 hours with comments from 40 concerned citizens. Wow, I don't think that Rotkin would allow such a thing to happen in our council, thank goodness. Three-quarters of those speaking favored adoption, citing the local monetary and human impact of the Iraq war and the need to support resistors and to speak out as a city against an illegal and immoral war. Those who opposed adoption urged the council to stick to local issues and cited a Chamber of Commerce poll of its members indicating that many merchants feared loss of business through boycotts if the resolution passed. I think the same argument was made in Berkeley in a resolution opposing the attack on Afghanistan in 2002. The municipal response to federal lawlessness is the latest version of a resolution that was first brought before the Arcata City Council in early February under the title Resolution Supporting Troops Who Refuse to Serve in Illegal Wars. Earlier versions were discussed at three city council meetings and at a town hall meeting that drew over 120 participants, but they failed to gain majority support of the council. Veterans for Peace, Chapter 56, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and the Redwood Peace and Justice Center all endorsed the resolution. Where, I would ask, are our Veterans for Peace, our Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, and our Resource Center for Nonviolence? And then they encourage cities that may wish to pass similar resolutions to contact us at greenarcata@hotmail.com. Greenarcata, one word, at hotmail.com. This is the actual resolution. Municipal response to federal lawlessness. Whereas a large majority of Arcata residents oppose the war on Iraq for one or more of the following reasons. The war is ill-advised and unnecessary. The war is based on lies. The war is illegal. The war is immoral. The war does not increase our national security. Whereas the cost of the war in dollars is a root cause of local economic hardships. Whereas the human cost of the war is unacceptable. Whereas issues of local and global importance are intimately linked, and the City Council is our most locally accessible governmental body and the most direct political connection between individuals and the federal government. Therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Arcata budgets $1,000 annually, which amounts to approximately one penny for every person killed in Iraq as a result of the U.S. invasion, currently estimated at over 100,000 civilian deaths and over 1,500 American military deaths, to be used as outlined below. Be it further resolved that the City Council of the City of Arcata commits itself to do anything within its power to influence the federal government to end immediately. Notes that's not planned to end or talk about ending or wait until the UN gets in there, but to end immediately the American occupation of Iraq. Be it further resolved that the City Council of the City of Arcata supports those enlisted men and women who are currently serving in Iraq by repeating its demand for the immediate withdrawal of all troops, and the Council commits itself to support in any way within its power both those residents who have returned from serving in Iraq and those who have refused to serve for moral or legal reasons. Be it further resolved that the City Council of the City of Arcata will consider placing a measure on a future citywide ballot asking voters of Arcata if Arcata should be declared a sanctuary for those who refuse to participate in the war. So they haven't declared it a sanctuary, but they have done these other things. And be it further resolved that the City Council of the City of Arcata will take the steps necessary to expand the mandate of the Nuclear Weapons Free Zone Commission to include promoting peace locally and globally, to rename the commission as the Nuclear Weapons Free Zone and Peace Commission, and to empower the commission to use the additional $1,000 budget allocation as they are able within budget and time constraints to 1. Inform troops returning to Arcata from foreign duty about locally available services, or lack thereof. Inform resident members of the armed forces about access to free legal advice and counsel for those who are considering refusal or have already refused to serve in the war on Iraq or other wars. And 3, work with local school boards and Humboldt State University to limit access of military recruiters to school and college campuses and to provide equal time for views offering alternatives to military service. Be it further resolved, the City Council of the City Arcata will provide ongoing opportunities for public discussion of current issues by sponsoring regular town hall meetings at our public facilities. Santa Cruz City Council, get a clue. Take a look at Arcata and learn something. This is the Arcata resolution passed at midnight last night, 3-2 majority, and it was sent to me by Council Member David Meserve, who I'd hoped to have on the air, but he's got all kinds of conflicting pressures, and hopefully maybe next week. I think he's going to be busy for this week, but we'll see what we can do. He also added he was on his way to a homeless services plan task force meeting, and at least they're jabbering up there about the homeless. Down here, of course, in Santa Cruz, it's a taboo subject. I'm not sure what they're doing with it up there, but hopefully there's, I'll try to give you an update on that when I get more information on it. So, that's the update from Arcata. Let's see here. For those of you who watched or heard Democracy Now! Earlier today, I thought it was pretty cold that the U.S. Marine Corps has ruled that no charges will be filed against a Marine in the fatal shooting of a wounded and unarmed Iraqi in the Fallujah Mosque last November in an incident shown in a television pool report. The Marine was also accused, according to Amy Goodman, of killing three other unarmed persons in the mosque. After a five-month investigation, the Marine Corps determined that the Marine Corporal fired in self-defense and will not face court-martial, spokesman Lieutenant Colonel T.V. Johnson said. The commanding general of the 1st Marine Division determined that the action of the Marine involved in the incident was pretty much consistent with the established rules of engagement and the law of armed conflict, Johnson told CBS Radio. Shooting wounded people in mosques. I don't know. Interesting. NBC News reported earlier that the decision was based partly on the fact that Marines had been warned fighters were feigning death and booby-trapping bodies, that the corporal apparently feared for his life when he fired the shots. Second incident investigated. The Marine was seen in images on the videotape that was shared with other news organizations. NBC said a second Marine remains under investigation for shooting another unarmed man in the mosque. So this is, what, 6 or 7 months later, they're investigating even whether to begin a court-martial of this guy. So you don't even get a court-martial. You get this investigation, similar kind of investigation, perhaps, to the investigation that cleared the five major honchos in Iraq, U.S. military honchos, for any complicity in the systematic tortures that were happening at Abu Ghraib and other military bases over there. I suppose on the upside, we have Juan Cole of Informed Consent saying 57% of Americans polled late last week say that the Iraqi war was not worth it. Only 41% said it was worthwhile. This is the most dramatic public disavowal of President Bush's military policies ever. I don't know about that, actually. You know, I mean, I was reading from early 2004, earlier today, I'm going through old newspapers as I attempt to clean out my endless piles of papers, and I find that in early 2004, there was a heavy majority against Bush's Iraqi, well, a significant majority, and it was around 57% then, too. So it's really, it's hard to get any kind of sense of where the American public stands on this. Certainly, there hasn't been any the kind of active opposition that was happening 2 years ago or even 1 year ago. Or maybe I just don't see it the same way. I'm feeling pessimistic about it. Although recent activities on campus and the Arcata City Council's activities and even Rotkin's activities in sponsoring and endorsing Mejia, these are all positive signs, certainly. And let's see more of it. House and Senate agree on $82 billion war spending bill. This is Tuesday, May 3rd. House and Senate conferees have agreed to an $82 billion supplemental spending bill for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. I think this gets about $300 billion now for these wars. A vote is expected in the House Thursday and in the Senate next week. The bill includes controversial provisions to prevent states from issuing driver's licenses to illegal immigrants, stiffen asylum laws, and complete a long-stalled security fence on the border between California and Mexico. Details of these provisions, which were the subject of intense congressional negotiations, were not immediately available, although wholesale changes from the bill originally passed by the House were not adopted. Most of the money allocated in the bill, $75.9 billion, will be spent on military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, and so forth. Here's a story by Kevin Zeese. Getting out of Iraq will prove tougher than getting out of Vietnam, by Kevin Zeese. Daniel Ellsberg of Pentagon Papers fame gave the worst news of the day to those examining lessons from Vietnam 30 years after the end of the war. We're going to be in Iraq a long time. It will be tougher to get out of Iraq than it was to get out of Vietnam. Why? The major difference between Vietnam and Iraq is Iraq has oil, Vietnam doesn't, and we need oil. It's much easier to start a war than it is to end one. Ellsberg was speaking at a forum organized by the Institute for Policy Studies, held Thursday, April 28th, at the Rayburn House office building. He pointed out that in 1968, the anti-Vietnam War protests were at full force, and the U.S. did not get out until 7 years later, 1975. President Nixon even ran for office, promising he had a secret plan to end the war, and we did not get out for years after that. If it had not been for Watergate, says Ellsberg, we might not have gotten out. According to Ellsberg, throughout our time in Vietnam, U.S. officials were saying the U.S. would only be in Vietnam temporarily, while in fact they were planning on staying for a long time permanently. This parallels claims by the U.S. government today. The government claims we're just staying in Iraq a short time until the country is stabilized, but the Department of Defense has been planning 14 permanent military bases in Iraq in the last month. Both houses of Congress approved funds for building the permanent military bases in the country, according to Zeitz. Ellsberg also pointed out that throughout the Vietnam War, people argued we had to stay or there would be more chaos and death. In the end, at least 3 million Vietnamese died in the war. Chaos was not prevented. Today, we claim to be a stabilizing force, but insurgent attacks in Iraq have become more sophisticated. They reached out to mainstream Iraqis, and there are daily deaths of Iraqis and Americans. Chaos is not being prevented, as many of the other speakers pointed out. And last week, of course, it's gone up significantly. The chaos is actually caused by the occupation, not prevented by it. When the United States left Vietnam, it was not a smooth exit. It was a rushed, chaotic exit. As soon as we left, the communists came in and renamed Saigon Ho Chi Minh City. This is akin to the concern Representative Conyers expressed during the forum. He is worried that if the U.S. announces a definite date of withdrawal, then those who do not want to be in power in Iraq will prepare to take over the government when we leave. Therefore, while he's planning, calling for an exit plan and opposes the war on occupation, he wants an exit plan. The results leaving Iraq in worse shape than it is now and worse shape than it was under Saddam Hussein. I guess he doesn't want a plan that leaves it in worse shape. Representative Conyers is not happy about having to clean up the mess made by the Bush administration. Of course, the point has always been for me that you don't have that choice. You're producing it in worse shape every day you stay. It's like invading your neighbor's house or something. I mean, it's just you don't get out. Not much time left, so I'm not going to be able to read some of these articles, which I kind of put aside, but that's standard. Jim Losey, a medical marijuana man from Santa Clara County, who's been on the station a dozen times at least, has a story, no marijuana dispensaries in Santa Clara County. Why is that? Can we have that in writing? And that's an article about the about his public demonstrations about that. He opened something up, and then he voluntarily closed it down. It's an article in the Mercury News I read last week, and I'm going to be looking into that more, maybe even having him on the air on Saturday. The Roger Mensch trial, as those of you, some of you may know who go to Indie Media, and it's covered there, was over, and the sentencing hearing happened on Monday. Mensch got a very, very light sentence. He got no jail time, actually 5 days time served, $220 restitution, a cost to the court, and 3 years formal probation, but a particular clarification from the judge that he could continue to legally sell marijuana and that would not be a violation of his probation condition. So that produced a lot of good feeling and optimism and relief among Roger Mensch and his supporters. I was rather skeptical because, while I was glad that that happened, it seems to me that, you know, that I couldn't forget that Judge Stevens, who gave the light sentence, was the same guy who gave the bogus instruction to the jury that Mensch was not a caregiver because he did not provide for the housing, health, and security of the people he was selling marijuana to, when it's housing, health, or security that's the wording of the law. And it's completely ridiculous that he was arrested with an ounce and a half of marijuana, although there were numerous plants. It's true, more than a total of 180 or 190 plants, including small clones, many of them small clones. He was never shown that he sold to someone who didn't have medical marijuana card. It looked like an operation to cover the asses of the DA and the sheriff that got the federal grant or the state grant, whatever the grant was, that allowed for a special drug enforcement arm in Bob Lee's DA's office and in the sheriff's office. And that's something we have to look into very carefully. I've prepared a Public Records Act request for DA Bob Lee, which I hope to deliver tomorrow. It requests all kinds of stats about his costs and the number of convictions and charges under the drug war, particularly specifically the marijuana part of the drug war, but also some broader statistics as compared with what previous DAs have done. We'll see if he responds to that. I'm going to start moving out of the studio because my time is almost up. I'm going to try to give Uncle Dennis a couple of minutes to get ready here. He's not here yet, but he should be shortly. If you want to get in touch with me before Sunday when I return, 9:30 in the morning, you know, that's when I'll be back, and I go till 1 o'clock, give a call to 831-423-4833, 423-HUFF, and I will try to respond to your call. Thanks for listening to this show. Thanks for, you know, hanging in there. And if you want to be on the air or you have any commentary, please let me know about it, and we'll see what we can do.
America, sweethearts, we found a place in Roxbury where we can meet the mortgage, go to church on Sunday. I teach communion class and David leads the choir. 10 years together thinking about children. Lots of children out there, feet up, feet down, hoping for a home and a harbor, a hand that doesn't hit. Where the form said father and mother, we had to cross it out. Father and father, that's David and me. 12 months of waiting, suddenly two little boys on our doorstep, scared and crying. Gave him a bath and tucked him in. 3-year-old Jamie, little brother Scott. Jamie had a bruise like a boot in the middle of his back. Love is love, no matter who, no matter where. Love is love, and a child knows when it's there. They can pry away the fingers, grace these walls with dirt. They can pull us apart, they can lie or they can hurt. Love leaves a trace, and the heart holds a place for love's return. McDonald's and Kmart, do you know how hard it is to find kids' shoes? Scott's first haircut, grinning and a little confused. Outside the aquarium, baseball jackets red and blue. Picture is like time standing still. Jamie was a scrapper, punched his brother, decked a kid next door. He threw a plate at David, then ducked and cowered, waiting for the blow. After supper I held him close. You're safe here, this is your home. And the rains came to the parched and broken earth. The papers smelled the headlines. Gay parents, two little innocent boys, TV news on the front porch. Politicians made a lot of noise. His liberal governor, he gave the order. Social worker phoned, have him ready at 3. Pick Jamie up at daycare. Kids were running, shouting as they played. We didn't want to tell him. Maybe the governor could have explained. Jamie was screaming when we strapped him in the welfare car. David said, we love you, and they were gone. Find out who your friends are. Some came round, some just let it go. Rallies on the common. seen people saying no, this is crazy. It's not a chain, it's still involved in a busted machine. Kitchen's clean and quiet, we change the furniture around. Still keep Scott's rabbit. In the middle of the night, sometimes I wake to the sound of a little one crying, and there's nothing there at all. David holds me, says, go back to sleep. Love is love, no matter who, no matter where. Love is love, and a child knows when it's there. They can pry away the fingers, grease these walls with dirt. They can pull us apart, they can lie or they can hurt. Love leaves a trace, and the heart holds a place for love's return. Heart holds a place for love's return.
Dead air. Dead air. We have dead air. Officially have dead air. I'm Uncle Dennis. Robert, the host of the previous Yak Fest, will be back on Sunday. I'm here till 11. We're going to play music from the 60s and 70s.
Boring.
Yeah, boring. You know, unless you happen to like that kind of stuff, in which case, you know. Which case you might, you know. Dad by and enjoy the show, you know. Whatever. This is Freak Radio Santa Cruz. All kinds of freaky things are happening downtown right now. There's 4 fire trucks and 3 police cars and, I don't know, people in uniform running around all over down there. So if you know what's going on, keep it to yourself. I don't particularly care.
Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love and hold her tight. So happy together. If I should call you up, invest a dime, and you say you belong to me, then ease my mind. Imagine how the world could be so very fine. So happy together. Toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. It had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. To be the only one for me is you, and you for me. So happy together. So happy together. And how is the world?
feel so useless down here with no one to love. Though I've looked everywhere and I can't find me anybody to love to feel my hard it is trying to live on alone. Every day I keep trying to move forward, but something is driving me up, but it's something trying to hold on to me. Anybody to love me, and I've looked around, I've looked everywhere.